Alrighty, hello again, everyone.
It's Halloween.
The 31st day of October 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm the host of the Daily Daily Caller podcast, and this is it. It is Thursday, and it is the day after the Nationals won the World Series. It was actually a hell of a World Series. If you really, you don't look at, if you just look at the scores, you think, well, every game was a blowout. But they were on paper, but they didn't happen until late in the game generally, which kept everybody on edge. I really only watch sports on certain occasions, depending on the team that I can get. And I watch the championship in every sport except basketball. I just find basketball boring. But it was a hell of a World Series, and the Nationals won. It was the first time ever, I think, in any professional sport where all the games in the championship game, all the games were won by the road team. Home field disadvantage, I guess. But congratulations to the Nats. Right now on the TV, they're going into the wee hours of the night with a bunch of drunk morons celebrating like they did something. I'm if you listen to the program regularly, ladies and gentlemen, you will discover that I am rather cynical about everything, or almost everything. And it's no different when it comes to sports. I am happy for the Nats. I would have preferred them to win over the Astros. But if it had gone either way, I wasn't going to lose any sleep. I'm originally from Detroit. The Tigers are my team. They suck. That's just the way life is. The only sport I really like is hockey, and my team is the Red Wings. And they had a pretty good run in my lifetime, so I'm grateful for that. But even when they won their first cup, I remember that, the first Stanley Cup, it was nuts in Detroit. My friend George was over. He was living in a crappy flat apartment in Dearborn, Michigan, and we were hearing reports about, you know, naked women running up and down Telegraph Road and parties everywhere. So we went out, not because we were super excited. We just wanted to see it, and we wanted to check out the naked women. We didn't see them. We didn't find them, but it was crazy. It was nuts. I never personally understood people celebrating wildly things they had nothing to do with, but that's just me. I don't take away other people's joys. I just have never been so happy that I wanted to overturn a car or climb a street sign or something. Maybe it's a character flaw on my part. Anyway, congratulations to the Nats. It was really a great World Series, and congratulations to Steven Strasburg for winning the World Series MVP. He pitched like mad. The whole thing, it was just great all the way around. Okay, like I said, there's a lot of stuff to get to. The whistleblower's cover is blown. We now know who the whistleblower is. Real Clear Investigations has released that information and a lot of information about the whistleblower, which is a little bit curious. It's a lot of things that you can see now why the Democrats did not want this information to come out, because it's pretty obvious what this guy's motivation was. So we will get into that. We have a ton of other things to get to. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of Jarrett Stepman's The War on History, you have to email me by 10 p.m. Eastern time today. So that's it. I am interviewing or scheduled. You know, this is the problem. The email, by the way, is derek@dailycaller.com. D-E-R-E-K is how you spell it. I got excited. I announced that David Limbaugh was coming in, and then David Limbaugh had to cancel, although not fully. We're supposed to interview him by Skype as of now. We'll see if that happens. I hope so. I hope everything's all right with David. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, so we'll find out all that stuff and talk about his great book, hopefully tomorrow. Otherwise, I'm going to have to bring my friend Brian back in, because I got to interview somebody. Oh, all right, let's get into the news. But first, a hat tip to our sponsor. Let me tell you about Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I feel so much better. And I can't tell you how much more energy I have. If I were a massive, rabid Nats fan, I would be out there climbing light posts and turning cars on fire. That's just how it is. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. Let's face it, our food was different 60 years ago. Minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy processing have depleted nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel so run down. Plus, your body is full of things that you need to get rid of that stop you from absorbing things. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. Try it for yourself. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. One word. Enter promo code Derek at checkout and you get free shipping. I drink it every day. Get ready for more energy than you ever thought possible. Getthetea.com. Promo code Derek at checkout. Okay, let's talk about the whistleblower. We have a name, we have an identity, we have a history. Paul Sperry at Real Clear Investigations. The headline, how whistleblower may be outed. Ties to Biden, Brennan, Schiff's staff, etc. What? I thought this person was just your average person who stumbled across something that disturbed them so much that they had to go and report it. Turns out this person was desperately scrambling for something to be offended by, something to report. The report reads, for a town that leaks like a sieve, Washington has done an astonishingly effective job at keeping from the American public the name of the anonymous whistleblower who triggered impeachment proceedings against the president, even though his identity is an open secret inside the Beltway. Everybody had their suspicions. Now, apparently, it has been confirmed. More than 2 months after the official filed his complaint, pretty much all that's known publicly about him is that he's a CIA analyst who at one point was detailed to the White House and is now back working at the CIA. But the name of the government official fitting that description and his name, let's see that, they spell it out because it could go either many ways. His name is Eric Sharamella, spelled C-I-A-R-A-M-E-L-L-A, has been raised privately in impeachment depositions, according to officials with direct knowledge of the proceedings, as well as at least one person, at least one open hearing held by the House committee not involved in impeachment inquiry, fearing their anonymous witness could be exposed. Democrats this week blocked Republicans from asking more questions about him and intend to redact his name from all deposition transcripts. Real Clear Investigations is disclosing the name because of the public's interest in learning details of an effort to remove a sitting president from office. Further, the official's status as a whistleblower is complicated by his being a hearsay reporter of accusations against the president, one who has some indica of arguable political bias in favor of a rival political candidate, as the intelligence community inspector general phrased it circumspectly in originally fielding his complaint. Ooh, wait, he's a liberal guy? Yeah, it turns out that he is. This story just has more twists and turns, because last week they were reporting in the pages of the Washington Post that the whistleblower, he doesn't need to testify. It doesn't really, what he said is irrelevant at this point. It doesn't really matter. We don't need to hear from the whistleblower. Well, we do kind of need to hear from the whistleblower. There are lots of questions for the whistleblower. Democrats don't want you to know about this guy's past and associations. He said, also, Sharamella huddled for guidance with, let's see, he was accused of working against Trump and leaking against Trump, says former NSC official, speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss intelligence matters. What? Sharamella left the National Security Council posting in the White House West Wing in mid-2017 amid concerns about negative leaks to the media. He has since returned to CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. Isn't that nice? He was fired from the National Security Council for leaking negative things about the president to the media. And the CIA said, well, come back home then, pal. It's all good. Also, Sharamella huddled for guidance with staff of House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, including former colleagues who held over from the Obama era, whom Schiff's office had recently recruited from the NSC. Schiff is the lead prosecutor in the impeachment inquiry. So he's been huddling, he's been coordinating, he's been plotting and scheming with Schiffy because a bunch of his former colleagues, a bunch of Obama-era officials, went to work for Schiff. Isn't that weird? Now, that almost seems, if I were a really cynical person, it would strike me as rather curious that one of the colleagues stayed behind to work in the Trump administration, and suddenly all this information was going funneled through his former co-workers, who now conveniently work for Adam Schiff, who is desperate to find anything to go after Trump about. What? It gets better. Ann Sharamella worked with a Democratic National Committee operative who dug up dirt on the Trump campaign during the 2016 election, inviting her into the White House for meetings, former White House colleagues said. What the hell you say? These people in the intelligence community are only interested in protecting this country from foreign threats and are the salt of the earth to hear the media tell it. But this guy sure has a very partisan past and direct ties to a bunch of people with a vested interest in getting the president of the United States. The operative, the DNC operative, Alexandra Chalupa, a Ukrainian-American who supported Hillary Clinton, led an effort to link Republican campaign to the Russian government. Quote, he knows her. He had her in the White House, said one former co-worker who requested anonymity to discuss the sensitive matter. Documents confirm the DNC opposition researcher attended at least one White House meeting with Sharamella in November of 2015. She visited the White House with a number of Ukrainian officials lobbying the Obama administration for aid for Ukraine. Now, this again was back when Ukraine had an incredibly corrupt government. This is all kind of weird, isn't it? A DNC operative working to dig up dirt on Donald Trump and trying to create the Russia hoax is also lobbying on behalf of Ukraine and their then corrupt government, having a lot of access to the Obama administration. Still, it just doesn't seem to want to register with the mainstream media. They're more upset that the Real Clear Investigations, which is part of Real Clear Politics, has outed the whistleblower. They've given his name. They're very upset. This is a threat. This is a danger. They should never, ever, ever have done it. On the internet, with Sharamella's name long under wraps, interest in the intelligence analyst has become so high that a handful of former colleagues have compiled a roughly 40-page research dossier on him. A classified version of the document is circulating on Capitol Hill, and briefings have been conducted based on it. One briefed Republican said has been planning to unmask the whistleblower in a speech on the House floor. On the internet, Sharamella's name for weeks has been banding about Twitter feeds and intelligence blogs as the suspected person who blew the whistle on the president. The mainstream media are also aware of the name, but they're not interested in that. It's kind of weird. There was a time when the New York Times, had they gotten wind of this, would have run with it. Would have run with it in a heartbeat. Could you imagine if somebody had tried to secretly, privately blow the whistle on the Obama administration, saying that the president himself had, ordered the IRS to attack, to block, to audit, to destroy his political opponents before the 2012 election like the IRS did? We're supposed to believe that the IRS just came up with that all on their own. I suppose there's a possibility that Lois Lerner was sitting around and saying, who can I destroy today? Career bureaucrats maybe do get that thought every once in a while. But it's kind of important to note that the media, in every chance that they had to do any kind of journalism regarding the Obama administration, opted not to do it. If you think back to the Obama years, the major stories all came about not from news organizations, but from two conservative groups, Judicial Watch and Citizens United. Hillary Clinton's email and the discovery of her secret server, Fast and Furious, the IRS scandal, most of the Benghazi, all of that stuff, everything involving the Obama administration came into light, then was reluctantly reported by the mainstream media. It all came into being because of Freedom of Information Act requests filed by those two organizations. They were incredible. I'm not giving a pass to the conservative news outlets either. They seem to all have outsourced their journalism to Judicial Watch and Citizens United. It would be nice. There was a time when they, the news organizations themselves, would go out and dig for information. They would file Freedom of Information Act requests. They don't seem to do that anymore. It's all about reporting. And then the stories, by the way, if you go back and you reread the New York Times stories or the Washington Post stories or listen to the cable news outlets during the Obama administration, the reason they didn't want to do the actual journalism, they're trying to do it now. The reason they didn't want to do the actual journalism themselves is because of the way they couched it. This information came to light due to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by the conservative Judicial Watch or the right-wing Citizens United. They could throw that caveat in there to dismiss the story to their audience. Don't worry, this is just part of a Republican plot. If they discovered it themselves, if they did the work themselves, then they wouldn't be able to sort of downplay the significance of it. Since they downplayed it, since they lied about it, they now can sit there gleefully, sexually aroused at the every mention of the Obama administration was scandal-free. The Obama administration was scandal-free. It was not scandal-free. It just wasn't reported on by the mainstream media, except reluctantly and dismissively. They weren't interested in it. In the staged press conferences with Barack Obama, where he called on reporters in the order in which their questions were pre-selected by the communications staff at the White House, no journalist bothered to ask about these things. It's kind of weird. You would think if your attorney general were held in contempt of Congress, that the president might face a string of questions about such a thing. He didn't. They didn't. Of course, President Obama mostly hid from the press, which is funny. I mean, I guess the Beatles hid from the screaming throngs of girls. So in one sense, I understand why Barack Obama sort of hid from them. You can only have, you know, Jonathan Carl kiss your butt so many times, or the people from the New York Times sit there and ask you how enchanted you are with the job that you're doing. But in general, they did not do journalism during the Obama administration. Thank God conservative. Could you imagine a world without the internet, without conservative media? You imagine how that would work? None of this stuff would come to light. The whistleblower would be as pure as the wind-driven snow and one of nature's wonders and perhaps the best among us, because all he wants to do is get the truth out there for the American people to stop Donald Trump from corrupting our democracy. That would be the storyline. Instead, we're finding out that he is a hack. These pictures up there. He's an analyst, which means he's a desk jockey. Looks like your typical beta male. He kind of looks like Pajama Boy all grown up. He looks like he double fists his mugs of hot cocoa in the morning. You know, only in movies and in ads for Democrats does anybody actually drink a mug of coffee or hot tea or cocoa or anything with two hands. You know, they just sit there like in the morning and they got their scarf on and they're ready to take on the day. It's a joke. Anyway, back to the story. Quote, everyone knows who he is. CNN knows. The Washington Post knows. The New York Times knows. Congress knows. The White House knows. Even the president knows who he is, said Fred Feliz, a former CIA analyst and national security advisor to Trump, who had fielded dozens of calls from the media. Yet the story continues. A rare hush has swept across the Potomac. The usually gossipy nation's capital remained uncharacteristically and curiously mum, especially considering the magnitude of this story. Only the fourth presidential impeachment inquiry in U.S. history. Trump supporters blame the conspiracy on a corrupt and biased media trying to protect the whistleblower from due scrutiny about his political motives. They also complain Democrats have falsely claimed that exposing his identity would violate whistleblower protections, even though the relevant statute provides limited, not blanket, anonymity and doesn't cover press disclosure. Yes, the whistleblower rules are designed against professional retribution. Can't be fired for it. That doesn't mean that you can't ever be exposed, that nobody can ever say who you are. They're hiding him, Feliz asserted. They're hiding him because of his political bias. The CIA officer specializing in Russia and Ukraine, Sharamella, was detailed over to the National Security Council from the agency in the summer of 2015, working under Susan Rice. Isn't that these names, all these people who Susan Rice did all those unmaskings. I mean, I don't know that it's a conspiracy, but it sure is fishy. And you would think journalists would have an interest in this story. Federal records show, he also worked closely with former Vice President Biden. Federal records show that Biden's office invited Sharamella to an October 2016 state luncheon the vice president hosted for Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi. Other guests included John Brennan, another guy this whistleblower was close to, as well as then FBI Director James Comey and then National Intelligence Director James Clapper. They're all in the same room. Now, when you're getting the heads of these agencies, the head of the FBI, the head of the CIA, and the Director of National Intelligence together with the Vice President and the Italian Prime Minister, when Sharamella's area of expertise is Russia and Ukraine, isn't that a little bit weird? Doesn't he seem like he'd be the odd man out at that luncheon and end those meetings? Why would you want a Russia and Ukraine expert in a meeting with the Italian prime minister? Is Italy thinking about invading Russia or invading Ukraine to claw back Crimea? Several U.S. officials told Real Clear Investigations that the investigation that was extended to Sharamella, a relatively low-level GS-13 federal employee, was unusual. Invitation. Was unusual and signaled that he was politically connected inside the Obama White House. Yes, again, why was he in on a meeting with the Italian prime minister and all of these bigwigs? And he's just some lowling in the federal bureaucracy. Former White House officials said Sharamella had worked on Ukraine policy issues for Biden. Could this be why Sharamella isn't super keen on the idea of getting to the bottom of Ukrainian meddling in the 2016 election? Could that be why he's not super keen on finding out just how corrupt Burisma was? I don't know. He worked with Biden on Ukraine issues in 2015 and 2016 when Vice President was President Obama's point man for Ukraine. A Yale graduate, Sharamella is said to speak Russian and Ukrainian as well as Arabic. He had been assigned to the National Security Council by John Brennan. He was held over into the Trump administration and headed to the Ukraine desk at the National Security Council, eventually transitioning into the West Wing until June 2017. Quote, he was moved over to the front office to temporarily fill a vacancy, a former White House official said, where he saw everything and read everything. The official added that it soon became clear among NSA staff that Sharamella opposed the new Republican president's foreign policies. Well, if Sharamella didn't like the president's foreign policy, he should have resigned, because he wasn't elected to a damn thing. Quote, my recollection of Eric is that he was a very smart and very passionate, particularly about Ukraine and Russia. That was his thing, Ukraine, he said. He didn't exactly hide his passions with respect to what he thought was the right thing to do with Ukraine and Russia, and his views were at odds with the president's policies. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was the whistleblower, an official said. In May 2017, Cherumello went, quote, outside the chain of command. Now, we hear about how important the chain of command is all the time. According to former NSC co-workers, to send an email alerting another agency that Trump happened to hold a meeting with Russian diplomats in the Oval Office the day after firing Comey, who led the Trump-Russia investigation. The email also noted that Russian President Vladimir Putin had phoned the president a week earlier. Now, he's not supposed to spread that information. Why wasn't this guy fired a long time ago? Contents of the email appear to have ended up in the media, which reported Trump boasted to Russian officials about firing Comey, whom he allegedly called a crazy, a real nut job. In effect, Cherumello helped generate the Putin fired Comey narrative, according to the research dossier making the rounds in Congress, a copy of which was obtained by Real Clear Investigations. Cherumello allegedly argued that President Putin suggested that President Trump fire Comey, the report said. In the days after Comey's firing, the presidential action was used to further political and media calls for the stand-up of the special counsel to investigate Russian collusion. So, this guy was miraculous. He seems like the Forrest Gump of politics, doesn't he? Suddenly, he's everywhere the Democrats go, everywhere the Democrats want to be. He is there feeding the narrative that Donald Trump is this horrible, corrupt individual who should not be president of the United States. He's leaking information that finds its way to the press. Or did he leak it directly to the press? Do we know? We should know. We should find out. It's very telling. And then once it was noted that he was leaking information to the press, suddenly, instead of being fired, he was sent back to the CIA. Maybe he's very good at whatever it is that he does at the CIA. I don't know. Considering, theoretically, Russia annexed Crimea on his watch and the United States didn't do much of anything, I'd start to question how good he is. That the Obama administration refused military aid to Ukraine over the Russian invasion and annexation of Crimea makes me again wonder, what was this guy so good at? Being able to speak a language is nice. It's certainly important for that job, but it is not unique to this guy. Why was this guy kept there? And while all of his colleagues went to work for Adam Schiff, isn't it a bit weird that he was left behind and suddenly they started getting all sorts of information? So I can see a chain of leaks from Cherumello to his former colleagues working for Adam Schiff, desperately trying to find a way to get rid of President Trump, to Adam Schiff, to the pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post. A picture begins to emerge about the possible leak train, does it not? All very interesting. Later on in the story, let's scroll down here. Republicans participating in the restricted inquiry hearings have been asking witnesses about Cherumello and repeatedly injecting his name into the deposition records, angering Schiff and Democrats, who sources say are planning to scrub references to Cherumello from the transcripts of the hearing they may release. Their reaction tells you something, said one official familiar with the inquiry. For example, sources said Cherumello's name was invoked by GOP committee members during the closed-door testimony of former NSC official Fiona Hill on October 14th. Cherumello worked with Hill, another Obama holdover in the West Wing. Are we really going to get to the point where presidents have to come in and wipe clean everybody from every department? I fear that's what we're going to. I don't care if you disagree with a president. You weren't elected to anything. It's you want your job, do your job the way you're supposed to do your job. If you don't like your job, if you don't like your new boss, if you don't like the direction the new president wants to take the country, resign, quit, get out of there. That's how it should be. Yet these liberals have metastasized themselves into the permanent state, the deep state, and they use their perches there to do damage to the duly elected president of the United States. As Democrats and the media get outraged about how you can't call this a coup, this is ridiculous, you can't call this a coup, what else do you call it? What else would you call it? It is the subversion of our republic. It is the subversion of our system of government. That you don't like the word coup, come up with a new one, or just use a whole bunch of words to describe what you're doing. But coup seems to work perfectly. The Washington Post ran a news story over the weekend critical of Republicans for allegedly trying to unmask the whistleblower for attempting to do the job journalists would normally do, the story continues. Last week, the paper ran an op-ed by the whistleblower's attorney claiming he was no longer relevant to the inquiry, beseeching the public to let their client slip back into obscurity. That's not the way it works. For its part, the New York Times ran a story last month reporting details about the whistleblower's background, but stopped short of fully identifying him, suggesting it didn't know his politics or even his name. Quote, little else is known about him, the paper claimed. On Thursday, Democrats plan a House vote on new impeachment inquiry rules that would give Republicans for the first time the ability to call their own witnesses. Only their requests must first be approved by Democrats. So there's a good chance the whistleblower, perhaps the most important witness of all, will remain protected from critical examination. Isn't that super duper interesting? That's from Real Clear Investigations. It will be denounced, if this story is addressed at all, it will be denounced as a right-wing website full of hacks that are trying to run blocker for the President of the United States. But we don't live in a Kafka novel. You get to know your accusers, and it turns out that this accuser, Eric Sciaramella, has a very interesting past. Very close ties to Democrats, very close ties to Democratic National Committee people, was a leaker in the past and was moved out of the White House for those leaks. All of this information, to my mind, seems very important that the American people know so that they can then make a fuller judgment of the allegations against President Trump. The problem for Democrats is the more we see of what they know and what they are desperately trying to hide from us, the worse it looks for them. This does not pass the smell test. There is a lot of stuff going on here behind the scenes that needs further investigation. And if this were a situation where the parties were reversed, you would not be able to stop journalists from scrambling to try to discover this person and who he had dinner with last night and who he lives with, who he's dated, who he's friends with. Has he ever donated to a political campaign? Has he ever volunteered on a political campaign? What is his party registration? All of that would be very important. The Pulitzer Prize Committee would be cracking their knuckles in anticipation of the first liberal journalist to find that information, ready to send their name to the engravers for their award. Yet, curiously, they've circled the wagons around this guy. They are not interested in who this person is. The new talking point is he doesn't need to testify. The lawyers came out and said he doesn't need it. What does he need to testify for? You know everything. We have the transcript now. We don't need to hear from the whistleblower. I think we do need to hear from the whistleblower, because on top of this whole thing being a massive fraud and farce perpetrated on the American public, there are also serious violations of our laws. This person, this whistleblower, was not supposed to be briefed on this phone call. Who briefed him? on this phone call. This person somehow found its way to Adam Schiff's office again. Was it just that he worked with coworkers? Was there discussion about we need to find something to get this SOB in the White House before they finally found something? What about all the communications beforehand? How many false starts were there? How many times did they run things up the flagpole and say, how about this? How about that? If we say the president did this, is that good enough? Will that be useful? Can that be helpful? None of it is being investigated by anybody in the media, except for over at Real Clear Investigations. They've got a line on this. I hope they continue to dig into this, but I tell you what I suspect is going to happen. The Real Clear body, the Real Clear Politics, the Real Clear Science, all kinds of Real Clears over there. What will happen is the left wing will run a stealth campaign to try to eliminate advertisers, try and target advertisers of the Real Clear brand. They will try to destroy them because they're exposing them. They try to destroy anything that runs risk of exposing them. It's how they work. The people who say that they want more information in the hands of the public, that transparency is the most important thing in a democracy, will do their best to make sure that this story remains in the shade for as long as they possibly can. But it's out there now. You can read it for yourself. I recommend you read the whole thing. I recommend you start asking yourself and your friends questions about this person. Play the game of what if parties were different? What if the shoe was on the other foot? Because we all know the answer to those games. This person, this Eric Ciaramella, should and needs to be grilled in public. If Democrats want their impeachment inquiry, their witch hunt, to have any credibility whatsoever, and that's an open question. I think they mostly want it for political reasons. But if they want it to have any credibility whatsoever, this guy needs to come in, and this guy needs to publicly answer every question put to him. The idea that his lawyers are now saying, he doesn't need to testify, leave him out of this, leave him alone. You don't get to do that. You don't get to throw a grenade and then run away. Have nothing to do with the consequences. That's not how our system works. That's not how our system of justice works. That's not even how our whistleblower laws work. The American people have a right to know. If Democrats think the president should be removed from office, they really believe that, and this isn't just a political ploy, which is, of course, a big if, then they shouldn't be afraid of the truth coming out about anybody involved in any of it. That they are, that they're terrified of it, tells you, I think, everything you need to know. Okay, enough about that. I'll be curious to see if I'm proven right about the media's disinterest in this person's identity. I suspect I will be. There was another controversy, though, a dog of a controversy in the media, and I almost felt embarrassed for the so-called journalists who were put on this story. The president, somebody tweeted out a picture of the president of the United States pinning, or not pinning, they put around the neck, the Congressional Medal of Honor. And somebody put out a picture of the president pinning the Congressional Medal of Honor on the dog that helped get al-Baghdadi. You know, the dog that chased him down the tunnel where he blew himself up with, it turns out, at least the latest iteration, it's tough to tell when everybody is reduced to guts. How many people were in the tunnel when al-Baghdadi blew it up? They thought at first it was him and three of his kids. It might just have been him and two of his kids. Whatever. He's dead. That's all that matters. Well, the president tweeted out this picture that somebody had made of him pinning the Congressional Medal of Honor on the dog. And the media was quickly on the case. You feel bad for these people a little bit. You think, did an editor call up these reporters and say, you've got to get to the bottom of this? The world needs to know about this story. And I wouldn't be surprised if The Washington Post added this to their bogus list of lies the president told. But the New York Times, fear not, was on the story. They actually put two reporters on this. Again, you've got to feel a little bit bad for them. Although, given the state of journalism today, they might win the Pulitzer Prize for this. Niraj Chokshi, I'm not going to be able to pronounce that, and Karen Zarek. Whatever happened to normal names? She says, the headline, two reporters, New York Times, headline, Trump tweets faked photo of hero dog getting medal. Ooh. The joke photo appeared to use an image from a 2017 Medal of Honor ceremony. The medal recipient was amused. They actually did a news story about this. They tracked down the actual, because it's the president actually awarding the Congressional Medal of Honor to someone, and that someone was taken out of the photograph, and it was replaced with the German Shepherd. Very good-looking German Shepherd dog, as the president was doing on there. President Trump tweeted it with the comment, American hero. Fine, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a little bit of fun, but the media is incapable of just letting something go. President Trump on Wednesday, the New York Times reports, shared an altered photograph of himself placing a medal around the neck of a dog injured in the raid last week that led to the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the Islamic State's leader. I love it. It's an altered photo. It's a doctored photo. Like it's some massive conspiracy. The image, which bears a watermark for a social media account for the conservative news site The Daily Wire, appeared to be an altered version of a 2017 Associated Press photograph. In the original, Mr. Trump is seen awarding a Medal of Honor to James C. McLaughlin, a retired Army medic who is credited with saving the lives of 10 men during the Vietnam War. Mr. Trump has spoken of the dog, whose name Newsweek has reported as Conan, in glowing terms in the day since the raid, which culminated with Mr. al-Baghdadi detonating a suicide bomb, killing himself and several children and injuring the dog. They got to the bottom of this. They actually tracked down the Medal of Honor recipient. They were hoping to God that this guy would be offended, that he would be removed from this photo, and it would be doctored to put the dog in his place. They wanted the quotes, Medal of Honor freedom winner, outraged about disrespect shown to his proudest moment. Alas, there was not to be any such thing. In a phone interview on Wednesday, Mr. McLaughlin, or I don't know how to pronounce his name, 73, who had not seen the image before a reporter sent it to him, see, he was blissfully living his life, and a reporter tried to crap on his day. Hey, did you know that the White House ripped you out of the photograph and replaced you with a dog? Doesn't that piss you off? Nope, 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 nope. He said he interpreted it as Mr. Trump recognizing the dog's heroism. He certainly was not offended and laughed when he compared the two images. After all, he said, Medal of Honor recipients accept on behalf of their entire teams, especially those who did not return from battle. And canines have long been part of war efforts. Quote, this recognizes the dog is part of that team of brave people. Mr. McLaughlin, who taught high school and coached youth sports after his military service, added that he had worked with a dog in Vietnam who helped detect enemy activity during missions. Quote, they were very courageous, he said, of military canines. Now, don't you love, this was a whole story. And then they have to go back. In August, meaning the president, he tweeted a fake image of a gleaning Trump Tower in Greenland, a country that he had reportedly talked about buying. He also tweeted a doctored gif of him hitting Hillary Clinton with a golf ball and another of him wrestling CNN to the ground. How joyless of a human being do you have to be? I get, you know, you're a reporter and somebody comes and says, hey, you know what? You've got a I got a story for you. Go out and report on this. Get some details. Find out if the Medal of Honor recipient is ticked off about being airbrushed out of this photograph. Get us something to go on this. And you go out and you find that nobody's offended. So what do? You end the story by throwing in other things. Trump has a history of sending out fake information, fake photos, fake this, fake that. It's unbelievable. The Washington Post did the same damn thing. Their story is entitled Trump Tweeted Photo of Medal of Honor Recipient Who Was Edited Out and Replaced by a Dog. They only sicked one reporter on it, someone named Alex Horton. But they too found that the Medal of Honor recipient was not offended by the picture and by the tweet and by the president's actions. Again, they left dejected and very disappointed that they didn't have the story that they wanted. They had to go back and edit it to reflect the truth. That's a sad commentary on the state of journalism today, but I guarantee you somebody somewhere will be out there awarding the the Medal of Honor for this crap. In 2020 news, it's not looking good for Kamala Harris. The California senator is having a little bit of a problem. Namely, nobody likes her. Politico has the story. Kamala Harris to slash staff, restructure campaign as she hemorrhages cash. It's, I'll get to that in a second. Just a little bit of background on the story. They write, Kamala Harris is dramatically restructuring her campaign by redeploying staffers to Iowa and laying off dozens of aides in her Baltimore headquarters, according to campaign sources and a memo obtained Wednesday by Politico as she struggles to resuscitate her beleaguered presidential bid. And you sit there and you think, wait a second, her campaign headquarters are in Baltimore? Yes, she made a big show about putting her campaign headquarters in Baltimore. It was a nod to Elijah Cummings and his battles with the president, because nothing is by accident. There's really no reason to have your campaign headquarters in Baltimore. Logistically, it makes no sense. She works in Washington, D.C. and lives half the year, more than half the year, in Washington, D.C. She lives the rest of the time in California. One of those areas, she lives in the San Francisco area, one of those two areas would make much more sense. But for symbolic reasons, Baltimore is a majority black city. She's trying to hammer home that she would be the first African-American woman to be elected president. And because of President Trump's clashes with Elijah Cummings, she chose Baltimore. Turned out to be wildly inefficient, as you might imagine. Why would you want, you got to keep your campaign at arm's length from your Senate offices, but you don't have to keep them an hour drive away from one another. There's a lot of crossover, I know from firsthand experience. So now she's laying off the staff. The Baltimore idea was a bad idea. It didn't pan out. It was a bit of racial pandering that didn't work, because mostly, and here's Kamala Harris's biggest problem. And in a normal year, in a normal political party, Kamala Harris's biggest weaknesses in the Democratic field would be her biggest strength. She could run on a law enforcement background. I'm a former prosecutor. I made people safer by putting the bad guys behind bars. I enforced the law, and I will make sure we do the same thing when I'm president of the United States. She could make that case. She could even run around saying Donald Trump is lawless, whereas I will follow the law. I have a history of following the law and enforcing the law. But it's 2019, and she's running as a Democrat. And those things, those concepts, those things that used to play well in every political party in this country, except for maybe the Communist Party, now don't play in the Democratic Party. Having a law enforcement background, being a law and order candidate, is a liability for the Democratic Party. They don't support that. They look at everybody in prison as having been railroaded, particularly people of color. They would not be in prison were it not for their skin tone. And therefore, they despise everybody associated with law and order. Look at the way that the left treats police officers, not just activist leftists. Look at the way that the media reports on police officers. A police officer is killed, no big deal, who cares? It barely makes a blip on the radar. But if something involving a police officer happens, why, that's the hierarchy of the way that the media spin stories is, A, if it's a celebrity, that trumps everything. Then it's a pretty white girl. If a pretty white girl killed somebody or was killed by somebody, that makes news. Then it is police of any color on a black person. If there is anything involving that, if there's a crime or a violence or somebody gets shot, then suddenly it is the biggest story in the world. They don't even wait for the facts to come out. 99% of the time, the facts are completely wrong. They absolutely screw it up. Just make complete clowns of themselves. But after that, nothing else matters. Literally nothing else matters. They don't care. Black on black murders in Chicago, Baltimore, whatever. Just ignore it. It's sad commentary. But the left, it's because of the left's hatred of police. Plain and simple. And you have a situation now where it's a liability. I am a law enforcement person. I have protected the community. I have put criminals away. And now she has to run as, I will decriminalize everything. I will let people out of prison. We need to end mass incarceration, so on and so forth. Politico reports the move comes as Harris is hemorrhaging cash and in danger of lacking the resources to mount a competitive bid against her better-funded rivals in Iowa. She doesn't have a chance. She's closing down operations in New Hampshire and moving staff to Iowa in a desperate attempt to try to get Iowa. The overhaul will touch nearly every facet of Harris's operation. The layoffs or redeployments coming at headquarters, as well as New Hampshire, Nevada, and her home state of California, a Super Tuesday prize that her advisors once viewed as a big asset. Yes, she was expecting. This is the problem with these firewall strategies. She thought California was her firewall. It will protect everybody from everything. And, if I don't win these other states, it doesn't matter nearly as much because I will win in California, and California is such a huge prize that everything will be balanced out and I'll be back in the race. Well, that didn't work out too well for Marco Rubio. That didn't work out in 2016 too well for Rudy Giuliani, or 2012 too well for Rudy Giuliani. They always have this idea that this one state, this is where I draw the line. The problem is, and it's always the problem in politics, success breeds success. So you start winning, and suddenly people want to, they flock to you. The bandwagon theory. Washington, D.C., again, the Nationals. There aren't very many people who are in the Nationals games, who can afford to go to the Nationals games, who were born and raised in Washington, D.C. They aren't exactly, lifelong fans. They moved here from someplace else. They probably and likely had a different team growing up. I'm still loyal to the Tigers, as loyal as I am to anything sports-wise. And they're my team. I wish the Nationals well, but they're not my team and they're never going to be my team. There are a lot of people who suddenly, once they started winning, oh, I love the Nationals, you got to go to the Nationals, and they buy season tickets for the status and to take clients, and suddenly they act as though they'd been Nationals fans all along when they weren't. It's the bandwagon effect. So somebody starts winning other places, and then by the time it gets to your home state, your firewall, that person now has a whole bunch of devotees that it didn't have before, and they're swimming in your pool. That's water from your pool. So by the time Super Tuesday gets around and Kamala Harris would have had her shot at California, she will be done. She's recognizing that. and it's not going to end well for her. Campaign manager Juan Rodriguez will cut his salary, according to the memo, which was just over $10,000 a month in the third quarter this year. Harris's consultants will also have their payments reduced, and the campaign plans to trim and renegotiate other contracts to slash overhead. There's a real possibility that Kamala Harris will not make it to Iowa. Again, because her biggest weakness, well, her biggest weakness is just that she doesn't really have any specifics. She always wants to, I'll have a conversation about that or we'll figure it out. She doesn't have a whole lot of answers. But another problem for her is that she comes from a law enforcement background, and the left despises police. They despise the cops. They despise everybody involved in law enforcement. They despise the laws. So having a law will bring law and order back to the White House is not what they want. They're openly running on thwarting immigration law. They're calling for the thwarting of immigration law. So of course they're not going to be happy with a law and order candidate. That's just who they are. That's how they are. It's a shame to see her go, though, because she will be missed by somebody, probably. Okay, let's see. What else do we have? You know the website Deadspin? It's kind of funny. Deadspin is supposed to be a sports blog. I might have read it. It didn't leave an impression. But the other day, the new owners of Deadspin, they're called GO Media, they sent out a memo telling the bloggers over at Deadspin to stick to sports. They constantly were talking about politics. They constantly attacked Trump. There are a whole bunch of liberals who never really played sports writing about sports. I don't know why anybody ever goes to this website in the first place. Well, the idea of telling sports bloggers to stick to sports was a bridge too far for too many of these lefties who really just wanted to draw a paycheck from somewhere so they could have people pay attention to their political rantings. Again, nothing to do with sports. Well, now there are bigger problems. The Daily Beast. Deadspin staff resigned en masse Wednesday following a public clash with top leaders at the site's new parent company, GO Media. The top staff's top editors and writers shared on Twitter late Wednesday that they were leaving the sports and culture website after the company mandated that the site no longer cover topics unrelated to sports. Imagine you're not going to let me do what I want, so I'm going to leave. Okay, good. Good riddance. Where did it go? In a statement to the Daily Beast, a company spokesman said GO was sorry that they couldn't work within this incredibly broad coverage mandate. We're excited about Deadspin's future and we'll have some important updates in the coming days. The resignations came a day after the site fired a top editor for refusing to hew to GO's new mandate to cover exclusively topics related to sports, a break with the site's freewheeling editorial culture, which often prided itself on its non-sports content. It's a sports blog, but it prided itself on its non-sports content. Now, why would it? Have you ever heard breaking news from Deadspin on the latest in the Trump administration or this, that, or anything related to politics? No, you haven't. And there's a very specific reason for that, because nobody cared what a whole bunch of sports bloggers had to say about health policy or foreign policy or the way we should be reacting in war in northern Syria. No one gives a damn about what these people have to say because they have no expertise whatsoever. They have no experience. So the new owners of the company, the people who signed the fronts of the checks, not the backs of the checks, said, we want to change this. We want you to stay within your wheelhouse. How about you do what you were hired to do? A novel idea in 2019, apparently, to which the staff said no, and one of their editors said no, and wrote a big piece rambling against Donald Trump again. Because he's a narcissistic monster. Well, he got fired because he should have been fired. If you don't like what your boss is telling you to do, quit. It's that simple. If you don't like the job you were hired to do, quit, leave. Problem solved. But no, they thought that they could protest. They thought that they could ride this out. They thought that they could rise up and win. And they can't win because they're replaceable. They're imminently replaceable. There isn't one single writer over there who's worth a damn and can have you say, well, we can't lose this person. Because I bet you can't name a single writer at Deadspin. Well, now you can be a writer at Deadspin if you want to write about sports. Imagine that, a sports blog that writes about sports. They will be missed. So and it's kind of funny when journalists are being laid off left and right and all other journalists are very, very upset about, oh my goodness, all these poor, wonderful journalists are being let go because the news industry is failing. Now you have one where the people on the payroll are committing suicide. And that's, I think, a good thing. It's more efficient that way. Finally today, this is a hell of a story. And it's related to the World Series. A guy named Mattress Mack. This is a story from October 1st, but it's incredibly relevant now. Mattress Mack, the man who just bet $3.5 million on the Astros to win the World Series. Oopsie, you think. A Houston man, New York Post has a story. A Houston man just rocked the baseball playoff betting world. Jim McIlvale, whatever. A furniture store owner known as Mattress Mack placed a $3.5 million bet Tuesday on the Houston Astros to win the World Series at the DraftKings Sportsbook at Scarlet Pearl Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, according to ESPN. The bet at plus 220 odds would pay a net $7.7 million for the Astros, the American League's number one seed, to win the World Series. The guy, Mattress Mack, 68, also recently placed a $200,000 bet on the World Series for the Astros to win in South Point, Las Vegas. Now, why is this guy doing it? Have we found the world's largest Astros fan? No. He owns a string of furniture stores, and he had a promotion going that actually probably worked out in his favor, although you'd think losing $3.5 million on a bet would suck, probably came out bigger in the other end. The massive bet, the Post reports, the massive bets are a hedge against the millions of dollars he would lose if the Astros win the World Series. His gallery furniture stores have been running a win-it-all promotion to refund customers on purchases over $3,000 if the Astros go all the way. Mattress Mack said it would lead to a $15 million loss for his business. In 2017, when the Astros won, he was out more than $10 million due to the same promotion. The seven-figure action would help Mattress Mack recoup most of his losses. So it's actually smart business. It just didn't work out. But still, he's, you know, got $15 million in sales he gets to keep, and he lost $3.5 million, plus all the free publicity now for Mattress Mack. I remember a few years ago, 5 years ago maybe, when the Baltimore Ravens were in the Super Bowl, one of the furniture stores around here ran a promotion that if the Ravens return a kickoff, it was very specific. It might have been the kickoff of the half of the first half of the second half, whatever. If they return it for a touchdown, all the purchases made at that furniture store in the week or two leading up to the Super Bowl would be free. And lo and behold, the Ravens returned the second half kickoff for a touchdown. So everybody got free furniture. They got screwed. I don't know if anybody placed any bets back then to share the wealth or mitigate their losses. But Mattress Mack sounds crazy, but then when you get into the math, it actually makes sense. Cost him $3.5 million, but he gets to keep $15 million in sales. Of course, I wonder how long the return window is and how many people will then be returning their couch saying, I changed my mind on this furniture now that they're not going to get it for free. because some people will do that. That's just how they roll. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening, spreading the word, telling a friend, not being a whistleblower on me, but being a whistleblower on the show. Be a Paul Revere. Go out there and spread the word on the podcast. If you want to help the podcast and improve the sound quality in studio, the website is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Every little bit helps and all is appreciated. Give out good candy today. Don't be one of those people who give out the candy corns. Don't do that. Or pennies. I remember getting pennies as a kid. It was never even a thrill when a penny was worth a penny. You can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. You have until 10 o'clock tonight if you want to enter to win a signed copy of The War on History. Otherwise, we'll be back here tomorrow with another exciting episode of the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. The Daily Daily Caller Podcast is produced by Derek Hunter. Director, Derek Hunter. It's executive produced by Derek Hunter. Senior producer is Derek Hunter. Supervising producer is Derek Hunter. Technical producer is Derek Hunter. It was edited by Derek Hunter. The audio mixing was done by Derek Hunter. Hair and makeup provided by Derek Hunter's Pillow and Soap. Production assistance provided by The Cats. This joke was submitted by listener Christopher Flatten. And this joke is funny because it's true.